Hello, this is Gary Cleveland with Helicopter Online Ground School. Welcome to our podcast. You will be listening to a live Tuesday event where we discuss tail rotor failure. Kenny Keller invites you to visit his site, www.helicopterground.com, where you can see four FAA-certified courses, private pilot, commercial pilot, certified flight instructor, and instrument pilot. Enjoy the podcast.
Several different ways we're going to teach this today. We're going to go through it kind of slow, and I'm going to ask for Gary to interject. And I'm going to go ahead and share my screen here for the first couple of slides. We built this presentation because this past winter, when we did Gary's check ride, while Gary was out pre-flighting, the examiner says, hey, you know what? I am having a lot of trouble with applicants not understanding the difference between thrust, loss to thrust, tail rotor failures, stuck pedal, loss of tail rotor effectiveness. So I built this presentation following these subject areas. The content in this presentation is from the Helicopter Flying Handbook, okay? So I'm not gonna go through and talk R22 versus Enstrom versus Schweitzer versus BK117, because you still need to go to the Pilot's Operating Handbook or the flight manual for the aircraft that you are flying for your specific model of aircraft. And the Helicopter Flying Handbook tells us this, and we'll come up to this slide in a minute, where it basically says this is a guideline. You still have to refer to your manual. As with all operations, always refer to the manufacturer's POH and or flight manual. Number one, okay? Number two, we're back up to the Helicopter Flying Handbook. So let's talk about what the differences are. Anti-torque system failure. Anti-torque failure usually falls into one of two categories. One is a failure of the power drive portion of the tail rotor system, resulting in a complete loss of anti-torque. The other category covers mechanical control failures, prohibiting the pilot from changing or controlling the tail rotor thrust, even though the tail rotor may still be providing anti-torque thrust. Tail rotor drive system failures include drive shaft failures, tail rotor gearbox failures, or a complete loss of the tail rotor itself, where the tail rotor flies off the aircraft. In any of these cases, the loss of anti-torque normally results in an immediate spinning of the helicopter's nose. The helicopter spins to the right in a counterclockwise rotor system and to the left in a clockwise system. The severity of the spin is proportionate to the amount of power being used and the airspeed. High airspeeds tend to streamline the helicopter and keep it from spinning. Let's touch on this one for a minute. Go back to, there you go, Gary, good job. Back to camera one. This is one question that comes up a lot, and you can come up in a check ride. When you have that higher speed, the helicopter is not gonna spin out of control on you, okay? So when you're in cruising flight, and you say the tail rotor flies off the helicopter, if you have 60, 70, 80 knots, streamlining the fuselage is what's gonna keep it moving forward. So you don't have to worry at those higher speeds that the aircraft is gonna start spinning on you. So that's why with most aircraft, pretty much everything we fly here, the POH for most of those aircraft say the same thing. If you have a complete tail rotor failure, if it flies off in flight cross country, it's auto rotation, look for a spot. If you don't see a spot, you can pull power back in fly until you have an open area to land to, and then it's re-enter auto rotation. For years, my examiner said, people will say, well, hey, if the tail rotor comes off and I'm in flight, I can just manipulate the throttle and go ahead and fly to my intended landing area and then go ahead and land. He's always said, no, I don't want to hear that. If you've had a major malfunction back here and your tail rotor's gone or the drive shaft's busted, then you got parts clinking around back here. So what's gonna happen is you continue to fly, most likely you're gonna keep tearing up the rear of the aircraft. The tail booms eventually maybe even come off. I've seen a picture of a Jet Ranger where the whole tail boom was gone, and this was back where, happened at Cleveland where I flew, and the guy got it on the ground, the pilot was on the ground, right side up, and the whole entire tail boom was completely gone. So, this is one that you really want to stick to at cruise speed. If you have a major tail rotor failure, it's inner auto rotation, look for a spot. If you don't have a spot, you can pull the power and continue to fly, but as soon as you have an available area, auto rotate to the ground. You do not want to keep flying the aircraft and trying to manipulate the throttle to get to another landing area. All right, so I'm curious, anybody in here yet? Yes, awesome, who's in there?
14 people. On YouTube, anyways.
Nice.
And on YouTube, one guy said, hi man, Netherlands, all is looking fine. And then
awesome, I'm gonna walk over there just so I can see what all they're saying. And so everybody can hear you too. What else we got? Watching from Fort Myers, Florida. Nice, Robert, new member. Hello, Mark. Mark from Sioux Falls. Picture and audio, both great. Awesome, great. Anybody inside of our membership site? Anybody commented yet? Oh, those are inside the membership site?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, nice.
And then some guy just said South Africa.
South Africa, awesome. How cool is this? Interacting with people from all over the world. From little old Plymouth, Indiana, at our little old dinky tiny airport. Very nice, thank you for everybody that's joining. Go ahead and leave your comments if you wanna ask any questions. We'll try to cover those before we're done. If you just joined in and you didn't know the beginning, we're kinda doing this as a trial and error today. We've had this presentation ready for a little while. And then I had some computer issues. And then we just got Gary's first day yesterday of kinda orienting him to his first day full time. There is a new public service. We do have a new Hogs member support line that Gary's taking care of Monday through Friday, 8 to 4, then returns calls when he comes back in the next morning. On the weekends, I'll probably check it Saturday and Sunday at least once or twice, but you know, weekends we try to make for family time, but we'll check them on the weekends. But if you're a member or someone interested in joining, you're still welcome to email us, but you can also now contact us. You can either text or call 574-767-1797. Is that right? Gary's shaking his head. Yes.
That's it.
So that's our new member support line. And we're happy about that, and I'm excited about that, because now you as a member or somebody wanting to get in, possibly join as a member, you can call and talk to Gary Monday through Friday. I, of course, can still talk to people too. Doesn't mean you can't email me or call me or text me, but that's our member support line that we're going to work with and see how that goes. In the past, I just didn't have a lot of time to return calls through the day. Yeah, if you had a tail rotor failure, it could be a number of things. It could be the drive shaft broke. Your tail rotor gearbox could be completely gone. The tail rotor could have flown off. The tail boom could be gone. There's a number of different things that could happen to cause this failure. And yes, I mean, there could definitely be a problem with weight and balance. It could be a problem with vibrations. But the ultimate goal still is to keep in mind that you want to auto-rotate. You don't want to try to continue to fly unless you go to enter auto-rotation and you have nowhere to go. You're going to have to go into a set of trees. But a mile ahead, there's an open area. Pull the power back in, keep the thing flying, and try to get to that area. Now, of course, as pilot in command, you may always have to deviate from anything that any book says anywhere. If, say, it was violently shaking and you felt like you had to go into the trees, and if that was your best option, maybe. But I would think, in general, you're going to at least probably be better off to continue and get to an open area where you can get down to a safe area. What do you think, Gary? Anything you want to add?
I think that a lot of vibration, yaw to the right, trying to logically think about what exactly is going wrong back there is not the task.
Right.
The task is auto rotate as soon as possible.
Exactly. And with that point, I'll elaborate more on that. The examiner we've been using, I've been using the same examiner now for going on 17 years. And we still occasionally use other examiners, but I've been working with one for all these years, and I remember him stating way back, and he still has the same opinion as of today. So we prep everybody going for check rides the same way, and I have for 17 years. He said, and we're gonna use the terminology, when the shit hits the fan, meaning you're flying along, and all of a sudden, the nose went which way? Engine tail rotor, the nose went to the right, aircraft violently shaking. Do you have time to think about and process every scenario of what could have just went wrong and then try to deal with it depending on what just happened? My examiner always says, hey, in an emergency, you need a clear thought process on what am I gonna do? And when something happens, nose goes right, aircraft's shaken, and your heart is racing, is not the time to be trying to go, did the tail rotor fly off? Did the drive shaft break? Right? Is this kind of where you were going?
Exactly.
You don't have that, you don't want to be even thinking that. You want a clear, concise action. What am I going to do? I'm going to auto-rotate, look for a spot. I have a spot, great, I'm going to go on down to the ground, because you've taken away the torque once you're in auto-rotation, so it's not going to spin on you. Down, auto rotation. You enter auto and you say, man, I'm over, you know, there's nothing but residential homes all tight together, but up there there's a Walmart parking lot, okay? Pull the power back in, try to nurse the thing along as you can keep it flying, get it there, re-enter, and back down to the spot. Yeah. Anything new comment-wise over there, Gloria? Or anything else you want to add, Gary? Nope. Okay. Cool.
One thing I like how you briefly mentioned ET, and maybe if somebody hasn't seen the other video,
yep,
describe what ET is, because that memory aid I've passed on to students, yep, and it really helps them.
Yep, and I'll tell that story. Thanks for the interjection. It's good for you to jump in there and help me. This is why it's so exciting about having Gary here. Instead of me relying on myself for everything, I now have Gary kind of watching over me. Gary can input things that I won't think of when I'm the one in front of the camera. Eventually, part of the time, we'll have Gary up in front of the camera, and I'll be over there running cameras, or vice versa. I now have that ability 5 days a week of Gary here to help me along the way, you know, give me input, bring in fresh ideas. It's just, it's a pretty exciting time. So what I want to tell you is, when I was a brand new instructor, I'd been teaching in the Robinson R22, and I started teaching the Instrum, and I went to a quick course to get checked out as an AirSure Instrum certified instructor, meaning I could sign off owners of aircraft insured by AirSure, or people that want to solo, whatever, I could insure them. You know, I could check them out and qualify them for the insurance. So they want me to fly with a guy named Randy Yablonski, in case any of you know him. Retired state trooper, flew for the state police, and then I believe he flies ZMS now, but he's always been an active instructor. And I went to fly with Randy one day, and we're out on the Instrum, and we're hovering down the taxiway. So we're hovering along, and of course he's checking me out, and he says, okay, as fast as you can right now, if the tail rotor quits, which way is the nose gonna go? So I'm going, okay, engine torque, tail rotor, you know, and as I'm taking those few seconds to try to figure out the answer, because I'm flying and trying to think of a quick answer at the same time, he goes, too long, you took too long. And I'm like, okay, and he goes, have you ever seen the movie E.T.? Well, of course, sure, I've seen E.T. He goes, never forget the movie E.T., and he goes, we're hovering along, and he goes, E.T. You know, when he put his hands up there, I still remember to this day, he goes, remember the movie E.T.? E.T. Engine tail rotor. Now, of course, this is in a counterclockwise rotating system, okay? It works. So I found a lot of comfort in that. That really helped me out, because I never had a problem again very quickly thinking ET. And I just thought about it a minute ago, and as I'm doing this presentation, what I do, I went in my head before Gary mentioned it, I went ET, you know, engine tail rotor, to the right's tail rotor in a counterclockwise system. So that was introduced to me 15, 16 years ago. So I've used it ever since. It's a great training aid for counterclockwise rotating systems, ET. So in the heat of the moment, something bad happens, your heart's racing, helicopter's shaking. If it went to the left, it's the engine, most likely. If it went to the right, it's the tail rotor. There could be an instance somewhere, maybe something else strange happens, but in general, that's a great memory aid. ET, in the heat of the moment, something bad's going on, counterclockwise, if it went to the left, it's the engine. If it went to the right, it's the tail rotor. Very good time to insert that. And we're going to keep rolling through these, and we could probably hit some of these again. Any comments before we move on, Gloria? Anything new? Nope, but glad you're here, Kenny. Thanks for making a comment. You never go wrong with a Kenny. Never met a bad Kenny. Sorry, my daughter's going, oh my God, Dad, shut up. All right, anything else you want to add, Gary, before we still keep rolling through here?
Just one real quick thing is I always thought that you know, if the tail rotor goes bad, not only are we going to have ET to help us know, you know, the helicopter's going to the right, and we got vibrations. If it goes to the left, the absence of the engine making noise is a big clue, in addition to ET. But then, if you think about it, we are a check ride prep course,
yep,
or site, and nowadays they're handing you an accident report, and you don't have the benefit of feeling vibrations and hearing the sounds. You're just reading that the pilot said suddenly the aircraft yawed to the right or yawed to the left. And so it is important to know what the aircraft's going to do, absent the vibration, absent the sounds, and things that you would, as a pilot, know.
Yep, absolutely. We know Randy's been doing that. Does Jeff do anything similar to that? Did
you
do that?
So far, it's just Randy.
Okay. So, and well, of course, we're going to see more of that as we move to the Airman certification standards. That's what they're wanting to interject a lot more, I don't know, scenarios in real life type situations. So we're going to see more and more of that. So that's a good point Gary just made, because that was your commercial you did with Randy, and that's what he brought out.
Yes, I had a stack of accident reports to read and then come up with my reasoning why I thought the accident happened.
Right. Very nice. All right. Well, I think now, let's see, do we want to get to the whole thrust thing with the tow boom yet, or should we wait and see what we got next? Let's go ahead and roll to the next. Let's see how far we go with this, because my mind's going so many different directions, I'm forgetting where we're at. So pick up where we left off. If a tail rotor failure occurs, power must be reduced in order to reduce main rotor torque. The techniques differ depending on whether the helicopter is in flight or in a hover, but ultimately require an auto rotation. If a complete tail rotor failure occurs while hovering, enter a hovering auto rotation by rolling off the throttle. If the failure occurs in forward flight, enter a normal auto rotation by lowering the collective and rolling off the throttle, which is what we were just discussing. And we'll go back to the hover thing here in a minute when we find a good stopping point. If the helicopter has enough forward speed, close to cruising speed, when the failure occurs, and depending on the helicopter design, the vertical stabilizer may provide enough directional control to allow the pilot to maneuver the helicopter to a more desirable landing site. Here's mechanical control failure. So before we go into that next section, let's cover the hover auto. If you lost your tail rotor in a hover, you're really only going to have one option, and that's going to be roll off the throttle. There's nothing else you can do. Flying away isn't going to do you any good. Again, we're counterclockwise. You lost the tail rotor, helicopter starts spinning to the right. I wish I had a video that could roll right now for you. When I first started as a new CFI, I watched a video from Bell, and they're using a Jet Ranger, and they simulated a tail rotor failure. Tail rotor coming off, not LTE, okay? We're on tail rotor failure still. LTE we're gonna get to in a little bit. So let's say the tail rotor flew off, or the drive shaft busted, you were in a hover, helicopter starts spinning to the right. When you roll that throttle off, it's gonna stop before you hit the ground. And I used to practice it when I flew all the time, every day. I haven't practiced one in a while, but after watching that video from Bell, it was pretty wild how this, you know, long Jet Ranger, big old tail boom is spinning. And the guy's talking, he goes, okay, we're simulating tail rotor, you know, just flew off. He goes, now watch what happens when I roll off the throttle. He rolls off the throttle, boom. Motion completely gone by the time he hits the ground. So I actually went out and practiced that, and what I used to actually show students that. And again, I'm not flying enough on a daily basis that I felt comfortable. Last couple times I was out, I thought about doing it, but that's not something that I urge anyone to practice. I'm not urging any CFI to do that. Let me put a disclaimer in here. This was back when I was flying 6 days a week, 600 hours a year, flying like crazy, and I was in that aircraft every day. I worked myself into the point where I got comfortable doing that. So, point is, if you lost the tail rotor during a hover in a counterclockwise system, start spinning on you, roll off that throttle, it's going to stop, cushion it onto the ground, and you're done. So there really is no other course of action if you lost the tail rotor during a hover, if it flew off, the drive shaft broke. Anything you want to add to that, Gary?
No, that's pretty impressive. I'd like to practice that with somebody that's done it a lot.
Yeah, we could go out and do that sometime when we just have some time to actually play. And Gary, and maybe we'll do this today, this is on tail rotor failures. Gary hasn't had a tailrotor failure that I know of, but Gary has had a couple engine issues and a drivetrain, but the drivetrain was just the belt driving from the main rotor to from the gearbox to the main rotor, right?
Well, I've had two transmission failures, if you call a cog belt breaking a transmission in a rotorway, and then I had a transmission fail in a Hiller.
That's main rotor, not tail rotor.
Correct. I've never had a tail rotor issue, knock on wood.
So we are going to do a video on Gary's engine failure. I want to try to keep on track. When I promise we're going to do this, we've been talking about it. We'll do this very soon, like in the next couple weeks. Gary had an engine failure in his rotorway setting up for the numbers 2-8. So I'm in here working inside the studio, and he comes walking in. He goes, "I just had an engine failure." And I'm like, "Really? Are you okay?" "Yeah, I'm fine." I'm like, "Where's the helicopter at?" He goes, "Out in the hangar." And I'm like, "You just had an engine failure, and you just walk in here all nonchalant, and helicopter's back in the hangar." He goes, "Yeah." And I go, "What did you do? What happened?" And he said he was setting up for 2-8, was going to do a practice auto rotation, and as he was getting ready to enter, just by coincidence, the engine actually stopped. So he flew it down, executed the auto, got it on the ground. He reached down, hit the key, it started back up. So he picked it up, hovered into the hangar, and came in to tell me about it. So we are going to do a video on that, because we've had some requests from people that say, "Hey, well, what is it like to have a real engine failure? I've had one in a hover. I've never had one at altitude in flight." So I can tell you what people say and what I've heard. We are going to do a video where Gary is going to go through what he's experienced, what it sounded like, what it felt like, because I know people say it's totally different, because when you do a practice auto, we know the engine's still running, so you still have that vibration and that noise. Like in the Enstrom, there's still a little bit of belt driving a little bit. So if you compared that to an actual engine failure where the engine went quiet, you have nothing driving the rotor system at all, even a little bit, I'm sure the feeling is going to be a lot different than a practice auto. So that is a video for another day. All right, so let's go to mechanical control failure. A mechanical control failure limits or prevents control of tail rotor thrust and is usually caused by a stuck or broken control rod or cable. While the tail rotor is still producing anti-torque thrust, it cannot be controlled by the pilot. The amount of anti-torque depends on the position at which the controls jam or fail. The technique differs depending on the amount of tail rotor thrust, but an auto rotation is generally not required. The specific manufacturer's procedures should always be followed. Okay, so let's go back to camera one. So I add a little bit to that. You know what that just told you. I wouldn't use auto rotation on a check ride. I mean, maybe some extreme instance, but again, it goes back to, what does your POH say? For example, the Robinson POH doesn't say for a stuck pedal. So in the Robinson, you would go back to the helicopter flying handbook. I know when you read, say, the Instrument manual or the Jet Ranger manual and the other helicopters I flew, BK-117, EC-135, when you read through those, depending on the aircraft, they give you a little different some different possible techniques of what you'll want to do. And I want to give you the real world point of what I know. I know that I can usually figure it out by, staying calm, taking my time. I've never had one happen for real, but we've done them in practice. And usually what I do is just practice with them stuck at different areas and come in and manipulate the throttle and see what's going to happen. And don't do anything dangerous. If you have enough fuel and you're doing training, you can go out and see what's going to work. What I know is they never come out the same way. And depending on the day, the wind, the weight, all these different conditions, these stuck pedals never come out the same. And I can tell you, even flying in the 135 environment, helicopter EMS, there wasn't one check airman that was really that good with stuck pedals. They would ask you to do it, and then usually when you'd mess it up, they'd go, here, give me the controls and let me show you. Half the time they couldn't do it and do it very well either. And I had one check airman, even 135 check airman, go, "Oh man, you just killed us," because I got to a certain point, it started to spin on me, so I just flew out of it and flew away. And he goes, you just killed us. And I go, no, I didn't. We're still flying. I didn't kill us. He goes, well, you could have. And I go, but I didn't. And he's like, you know, he kind of argued with me. And I said, hey, I got plenty of fuel. When I realized it wasn't going the way I wanted to go, I flew away. I'm going to go around and set it up again. So, you know, in the event you're about ready to run out of fuel, which you never should be, you're going to have time to come and fly in and kind of manipulate the throttle and see how the aircraft's going to act. So, yes, you need to go with whatever your POH for whatever aircraft you're flying tells you. Or if your POH doesn't have anything for that specific aircraft, you could go back to the helicopter flying handbook. And then you can also try to stay calm, come in, and see how the aircraft's going to act. Anything you want to add there, Gary?
Only that the examiner in my CFI check ride said, make sure you're teaching your people not to auto-rotate with stuck pedal.
Right. All right, we'll go through. Got a question?
Just you from here.
Okay, I'll go through the stuck left pedal, and then we'll see what we got for questions, because this might answer a question that might be there. Okay, we'll go through this here. Landing stuck left pedal. The following is a generalized description of procedures when more specific procedures are not provided, like I just talked about a minute ago. A stuck left pedal, high power settings, results in the left yaw of the helicopter nose when power is reduced. Rolling off the throttle and entering out of rotation only makes matters worse. The landing profile for a stuck left pedal is best described as a normal to steep approach angle to arrive approximately 2 to 3 feet landing gear height above the intended landing area as transitional lift is lost. The steeper angle allows for a lower power setting during the approach and ensures that the nose remains to the left. Upon reaching the intended touchdown area at the appropriate landing gear height, increase the collective smoothly to align the nose with the landing direction and cushion the landing. A small amount of forward cyclic is helpful to stop the nose from continuing to the right and directs the aircraft forward and down to the surface. In certain wind conditions, the nose of the helicopter may remain to the left with near zero ground speed above the intended touchdown point. If the helicopter is not turning, simply lower the helicopter to the surface. If the nose of the helicopter is turning to the right and continues beyond the landing heading, roll the throttle toward flight idle, the amount necessary to stop the turn while landing. If the helicopter is beginning to turn left, the pilot should be able to make the landing prior to the turn rate becoming excessive. However, if the turn rate begins to increase prior to the landing, simply add power to make a go around and return for another landing. I like that one. Let's go ahead and roll through this before we get into your discussions. Landing, stuck neutral, or right pedal. The landing profile for a stuck neutral or a stuck right pedal is a low power approach terminating with a running or roll on landing. The approach profile can best be described as a shallow to normal approach angle to arrive approximately 2 to 3 feet landing gear height above the intended landing area with a minimum airspeed for directional control. The minimum airspeed is one that keeps the nose from continuing to yaw to the right. Upon reaching the intended touchdown area at the appropriate landing gear height, reduce the throttle as necessary to overcome the yaw effect if the nose of the helicopter remains to the right of the landing heading. The amount of throttle reduction will vary based on power applied and winds. The higher the power setting used to cushion the landing, the more the throttle reduction will be. A coordinated throttle reduction and increased collective will result in a very smooth touchdown with some forward ground speed. If the nose of the helicopter is to the left of the landing heading, a slight increase in collective or aft cyclic may be used to align the nose for touchdown. The decision to land or go around has to be made prior to any throttle reduction. Using airspeed slightly above translational lift may be helpful to ensure that the nose does not continue yawing to the right. If a go around is required, increasing the collective too much or too rapidly with airspeeds below translational lift may cause a rapid spinning to the right. Once the helicopter is landed and is sliding, rolling to a stop, the heading can be controlled with a combination of collective, cyclic, and throttle. To turn the nose to the right, raise the collective or apply aft cyclic. The throttle may be increased as well if not in the full open position. To turn the nose to the left, lower the collective or apply forward cyclic. The throttle may be decreased as well if it is not already at flight idle. There, okay, so is there any other emergency procedure that is that long and drawn out for anything? Nothing I can think of. So what I want to say is, over the years, I've always been a little intimidated by the stuck pedal thing, because no matter which aircraft you're talking about, when you go read about it, it's like, that's a lot of stuff, a lot of steps to remember if you're trying to memorize all that and what to do. So you got to refer back to the aircraft you're flying, have a good idea of what they're saying in the general, under the helicopter flying handbook section, with what we just went through, with what you're gonna do when you come in. But my best advice is, it's gonna be different every single day, depending on wind, weight, airspeed, temperature, everything's gonna change. Take your time and know that you're gonna be able to manipulate the nose and do the best that you can, and just try to stay calm, and you'll be able to figure it out. You'll be able to get it on the ground. By getting yourself all riled up, it's just gonna make things worse. I'll see if Gary's got anything to add while I go over and see what we got for questions.
Okay.
Anything you want to add, Gary?
Well, sometimes in flight, I'll give a student a hands-on feel for what all these words mean by simply having the aircraft in an air taxi and gently raising and lowering the throttle, staying within the limitations, but seeing how the aircraft responds to throttle up and throttle down without changing the pedals.
All right, well, let's keep rolling. Before we go to LTE, we're gonna go to the other room just for a second, because there's a main problem that our examiner, I'll walk over there now, make sure my monitor's still on. So you can go ahead and move that over, Gary. Looks like I'm on in the next room. Here's the one thing that our examiner keeps hitting on. Is, he says, he continually has a problem with people understanding what is going on back here with tail rotor thrust, okay? So, in this helicopter, tail rotor's right here. Where's the thrust going? A lot of times people will say that the thrust is this way, okay? The tail rotor thrust is going against the tail boom, pushing this way, okay? Counter affecting torque. What's going this direction is just the airflow moving down, all right? This is dirty, turbulent air that's blown away, and people perceive that as thrust. And you don't feel bad if you're confused on this, or you thought it was the other way around, because the examiner would not point this out if this was not a problem. He said, continually, he sees this, and every check ride we've done in the last year, I've watched him out there with the applicant on their pre-flight. He's right back there at the tail rotor, and I can always see, by the way, they're talking in hand movements, and he's pointing. He's making sure every time that a person understands, tail rotor thrust is not this way. That's just dirty, turbulent air moving away from the tail rotor. The thrust that tail rotor is providing is pushing against the tail boom to counter effect torque. Anything you want to add to that, Gary?
No, that was a nice demonstration with the green screen.
I like the helicopter. Again, he wouldn't bring it up if this wasn't a problem, and that's exactly what he said. He said people are continually messing that up. So, one more time. Tail rotor thrust is against the tail boom. The airflow moving this way is nothing other than just turbulent air. It's just the debris. It's that turbulent air just getting pushed away. So thrust is against the tail boom. All right, anything you want to add to that?
No, very good. Very
all right. I am going to do LTE. We're going to go to flip chart. Before we go to that, I do have a good video that I like that I made about a year and a half ago on LTE. It's inside ground school. It is on YouTube. I like that video. I took a lot of time and going through and doing some shots outside with the helicopter, how you would approach the different angles and show you some different shots. And I'm really happy with that LTE video. But we're gonna go through LTE again today, and we're gonna use this flip chart that I got a while back that I haven't used yet. So Gary's gonna switch the cameras, and we got two camera shots, so we can go back when I'm talking, get my head in the picture, and then you can zoom in to this. If you want to try that, see if that shot will go right in. That way, you see me plenty, you don't need to see me. So this presentation came right from the helicopter handbook, flying handbook, okay? Also called uncommanded rapid yaw towards advancing blade. This is very important. It can result in a loss of the aircraft if left unchecked, meaning you can have a total loss of the aircraft. Boom, it's over, aircraft destroyed. Hopefully you walk away. So LTE is one that I think we don't study enough, we don't harp on enough, and it does wreck helicopters. So we're using a flip chart just to give you a little bit different of a demonstration. We're always trying to break things up and give you new ways to look at things. So, main rotor disc vortex interference. When that wind is coming in this direction, they say 315 degrees to 285, it's taking this turbulent air and it's blowing it into the tail rotor, okay? So that's making the tail rotor less effective. It's important to remember the tail rotor is not stalled, it's just operating in turbulent air, so it's not as effective, okay? And this happens in winds 10 to 30 knots. Let's go to the next one. Weathercock stability. When this wind is behind you and they're saying 120 to 240 degrees, so they're giving you a pretty wide range of the wind anywhere in this area, it's what they call weather vane. When that wind is coming in this way, it's gonna make that aircraft dance. It's gonna make it shuttle back and forth. You gotta stay on top of those pedals. This is why when we're training in the beginning and people are struggling so much with pedals, we really harp on that good pedal control, because if you're lazy, aircraft can get away from you. When you're lazy, we call you lazy pedal guy or lazy pedal girl. You gotta stay on top of those pedals. So this is the weathercock stability. And then we have one more. Tail rotor vortex ring state. This is 310 degrees to 210 degrees. So remember, turbulent air is going this way. The thrust is going this way. The thrust is going against the tail boom. That dirty turbulent air is going this way. So what's happening? The air coming from this direction, 310 degrees to 220, is pushing that dirty turbulent air right back into the tail rotor. So can the tail rotor do its job? No, it starts becoming less efficient. So those are your three winds. Again, this is coming right from the helicopter flying handbook. Things to remember. Number one, airflow and downdraft generated by the main rotor, blade tip vortices, turbulence and other phenomena affecting airflow of tail rotor, high power settings, slow forward airspeed, airflow relative to the helicopter, and a combination of any one of these things can cause you to get into LTE. So there's a lot to think about when you take one of these or two of these or three of these and put them together. You know, as you get high, hot, humid, depending on the winds, you really gotta remain on top of the pedals. Recovery technique. Apply forward cyclic to increase speed, altitude permitting. A recovery path must always be planned and avoid rapid collective increase. Auto rotation may be the best course of option. Must be the best course of action. It's hard when I do this stuff live. I should have a bottle of water up there so I can keep drinking. All right, reducing the onset of LTE. Maintain operating RPM. Avoid tailwinds below 30 knots. If you have above 30 knots of airspeed, you're not gonna get into LTE. This is why I tell people when, let's say you're out training and you're done, you're gonna go in, and they'll turn around and hover a half mile back to the ramp with the wind behind them, and they'll fight it all the way back. It's like, you know what, just take off into the wind, go around, and come back in and land at the ramp. That way you're not dealing with that position of going down the taxiway with wind behind you and making you struggle. Avoid tailwinds below 30 knots. So if you're above 30, you won't get in it. Avoid out of ground effect. As a private pilot, you really shouldn't probably be hovering out of ground effect or flying out of ground effect. In a commercial environment, you will. So in a commercial environment, you're gonna have to be more careful. Avoid OGE, that's out of ground effect, and high power below 30 knots. Again, back to our magic number three. If you keep your airspeed above 30, you're not gonna get an LTE. It's when you're slow and the winds are in one of those three directions is when you're gonna possibly have a problem. Beware of hovering in winds 8 to 12 knots, okay? So they're telling you 8 to 12 knots. They're not saying just 3 or 4, and they're not saying 20. Beware hovering in winds 8 to 12 knots. Beware of large left pedal inputs. be alert changing winds, and execute slow turns. So this is why we're always talking about everything we do is super slow. People sometimes go, oh my God, you're redundant, making me go so slow across the ramp and stop, turn, move over here, stop, turn. We do that, we command you or make you learn to do all this slow, because if you do it slow, stay low to the ground, make your inputs very nice, stay on top of the aircraft, you're not gonna get into trouble. Execute slow turns to the right. So that's a little bit of a review of the LTE, not to be confused with the tail rotor flying off, the drive shaft breaking, the main or tail rotor gearbox blowing to pieces and coming apart. Those are separate from LTE. LTE, there's nothing wrong with the aircraft. You've put yourself in a position, you put yourself in a bad position by using good control inputs, being aware of where the wind is at, stop, turn, staying on control. Don't see if eye level, don't let your students get away with too much of the back and forth, back and forth. If you let it go too far, it may be unrecoverable. So that's the big key in everything that we're training and with smooth control inputs, trying to keep you precise with everything you do. Nothing sloppy, nothing too fast. You know, we'll use Gary for an example in the beginning. You know, Gary would be like hover taxiing, like, and I'd be long, Gary, slow down, whoa, whoa. Especially if you do that downwind, the faster you go, the more power it requires. And then if you're not on top of the power, then the RPM starts rolling down. And when the main rotor slows down, remember the tail rotor slows down. So when you let the RPM creep down, tail rotor creeps down, and it's more likely to get into a stalled, no, it's not stalled, a less effective condition. Anything you want to add to that, Gary?
No, very good.
Let's go over, see what we got. Anything I need to look at, Gloria? No? Dan Christman, hey, hello Kenny, love the LiveCon. Awesome, thanks Dan. This is great, Kenny. I was just talking about this one with many. Dan, this is, as you know, because you're out there teaching, it's just a continual problem. And that's what our examiner said, and that was why we first built this presentation and did a little practice today with Gary to get him used to everything. I'm gonna jump over here to YouTube. Gary, there you go, Gary's moving the camera around. Very nice. Let me jump in there, Gloria, and I'll look at those comments, see if there's anything we can elaborate on. And you can jump in there too, Gary, if you got anything you want to add. Let me see what we got here. If your tail rips off, doesn't that mean your gearbox is gone too? We talked about that one, right? Yeah. If your tail boom comes off, your main rotor gearbox is gone. Your tail rotor gearbox is gone. Kenny said hello. Kenny and everyone, we said hi to him. Lars, that's actually a really good training aid. Thank you very much, Lars. We like that. Good tip on the ET. We like that. I like it too. I mean, that ET thing, like I said, I never forgot that. I'm a brand new CFI going down the taxiway, and the older instructor goes, real quick, right now, you lose the tail rotor, where's the nose going? And I'm going, you know. He's going, too long. ET. Ever seen the movie ET? Yep. And he's going, ET. Engine tail rotor. Love that one. I love the idea that you guys go over real life accidents and learning from that. Yeah, hey, I am the king of admitting of all the dumb stuff that I've done because I've done a lot of it. And that's what we want other people to learn. I mean, some things you have to go out and experience for yourself and make mistakes, but we want to try to help you save some headache and heartache, not only in your training, but hopefully maybe keep you alive by sharing the dumb stuff that we've done. Most of your pilots, and I'll see what Gary thinks about this, but helicopter pilots in general, especially if they get more time under their belt, get a little cocky and they're pretty cool and I'm cool because I'm a helicopter pilot. They don't really like talking about the mistakes they've made. Almost nobody talks about helicopter accidents. You know, I did a video on my ground residence accident, and I've never had a nightmare to this day, because from day one I talked about it and I've shared my experience with that. Never hid from it, run away from it, but out of all the helicopter pilots I know, other than Gary, I can't think of anybody talking about any accident they've been in. So we know accidents happen, but why don't helicopter pilots come out and talk about them? They don't, because it's a macho thing. You know, it's pride, it's ego. Well, the only way usually you hear it is when it leaks out and somebody says, hey, did you know someone had an accident? The pilots in general don't want to talk about them. So We try to add as much real life stuff to this as we can. Okay. Definitely you have plenty of time on a Ranger than an R22. Yeah, I've got about the same in both, probably. Me personally, I have R22 time. I did my private commercial CFI on the R22. And then the Jet Ranger, I did 250 hours in Cleveland. And I did about 100 hours here with a guy that bought one that we were training personally. So I'm probably about the same between R22 and Jet Ranger. Vibration is one indication that can be easily recognized. Yeah, you always have a vibration pretty much no matter what it is. Most everything has some type of vibration. I have watched your video on LTE like 3 times already. Really good video. Thank you, Lars. I do like that video. I spent a lot of time on it, and I really just thought about how I wanted to just help relay to people how and why it happens. And I used as much real, went out and did as much I could with video to try to just, you know, really help people understand. That's what I'm always trying to do. I'm still trying to figure out how to really teach selling with power. I harp on it all the time and talk about it, but I'm still trying to come up with the perfect way to use a helicopter with smoke and, you know, smoke bombs or some way to really get to where you can show those vortices. So that's what, you know, I'm really looking to do next. Thanks, Kenny. This was brilliant. I'm actually going to practicing and refreshing stuck pedals in a bit with an instructor on Thursday. Thanks from Cape Town, South Africa. That's awesome. I'm guilty of not practicing them enough. It's not a maneuver in the PTS, so it's not necessarily something the examiner is going to do, but he could still ask you to do it, and our examiners still ask about it in the classroom. So even though it's not in the PTS, which I don't know why it isn't, it's still something they may ask you about, and that's one thing that I know I personally would like to practice a little more, just because I think it's kind of a tough one. Richard, hi Kenny, Rich from Florida. Did I read this earlier? Enjoyed seeing your progress from signing up 2 years ago. Still go back once in a while, review some topics to stay current. Yeah, we've done a lot to try to move this thing forward, and members are going to see so much more new coming. It's going to blow your minds. We just keep making progress. All right, looks like I got taken care of everybody that's inside there, so I'll go back up here just to wrap up. So yeah, we got a new pan and tilt head for our camera mount. So Gary's monkeying with that a little bit. So that went really good. I'm happy with that for a first time presentation we've had laying here that we wanted to get done. And I was gonna go through it with Gary, and I thought, you know what, let's just do it live. Put it out there for our members inside the site. So I'm gonna see if Gary's got anything that you wanna add, Gary.
No, second day here at Hogs. I'm excited.
Yep, it's the second day here. I'll elaborate on that before we go. My second day coming in, knowing that Gary was already here, already in, responding to members inside Ground School, checking YouTube comments, answering any phone calls on the new Hogs member support line at 574-767-1797. We're pretty happy about that. You can still email us at me@kenny@helicopterground.com. You can email gary@helicopterground.com. Brian Rutledge is still our operations manager. Brian's working on a bunch of ratings, finishing up a bunch of stuff. So he's kind of helping us from the outside, but you can still email brian@helicopterground.com. And then you're more than welcome to email us, but we have the new phone line available. I'm gonna tell you the number one more time, 574-767-1797. When Gary comes in on the mornings, Monday through Friday, he'll check the phone. So you can text that number as well. If you'd like to text us at that number, you can call and leave a message. Gary's here 8 to 4 Eastern Standard Time, Monday through Friday. So Gary is not only gonna be helping me in the studio, Gary's gonna be flying with students, doing ground with students, but he's also in charge of member support. So when I come in, I can get to making videos or do whatever I need to do. Gary can get together with me on different things that we need to handle. And we just think this brings something new and cool to Ground School, having full-time dedicated support, you know, Monday through Friday, where you know you can reach somebody. If he doesn't answer, it's because he's doing ground with me, or not doing ground with me. Well, he might be teaching me some ground, but he's either with a student, or he's out flying, or he's helping the studio. So if he doesn't answer when you call, leave a message and he will call you back. So I think I'm going to call that good there. Thanks everybody that joined. Let us know, even if you're viewing this video after the fact, go ahead and put your comments down below. We're going to start doing, I believe, we're going to try to do this at least once a week, if not more. We have a lot of content that we're going to start reshooting from the older videos. And the idea is we can shoot them live just like this.
Only at Helicopter Online Ground School. HelicopterGround.com.